95.3 The Score is your sports station. Log on and listen live at 95.3thescore.com.
I hope you're ready. It's that time. Climb aboard, all aboard, for the radio ride known as Sports Talk.
I got a bad feeling about this.
I can't take it anymore.
I am losing my mind.
Brought to you by Guarantee RV.
I know that, dude.
On Highway 99 in Junction City. Online at GuaranteeRV.com.
Alex is sitting there saying, what the heck are they talking about?
I would have Mariota out at 3 in the morning drunk, pawning his Heisman Trophy to get into an illegal poker house.
And now, a guy with lots of issues.
Yeah, I kind of do have issues.
No, I mean, like, lots of issues.
Shut up and get on with the program. Dude is a snot.
And broadcasting them, searching for answers.
Who is this?
It's Steve Tannen.
Have another donut, you fat pig. You. Welcome to the 5 o'clock hour of Sports Talk. We've achieved Tuesday. Two late games this week, by the way. 8 o'clock for the men on Thursday and Saturday. I wasn't consulted on this, you know. And I really think we should be as the voice of the Ducks. So you guys are doing pregame, you're doing postgame, you're going to have people doing the game back in the studio. Yeah. So what do you think? 8 o'clock game? No. Lower. Be like the Price is Right. Lower.
Earlier.
7:30. Lower. Earlier. 7. I'm willing to negotiate, but it starts at 7. Anything after 7, you're just being pains in the ass. As far as the women go, they play the winner of Utah and Washington. That we know is 2 o'clock on Friday. So we're going to be watching that game while we're on the air. Fortunately, I could be somewhat dismissive because of what we've seen when they've played those teams. You know, more realistically, you get into the semis on Saturday and because Oregon is the one, they don't have to deal with UCLA or Stanford until the, championship round. Yeah. So the second game would be 6 o'clock on Saturday, which, oh, yeah, I just realized that overlaps with just about overlaps with the men's game. You know, the women generally end in about a minute and 50. The guys on TV, there's usually different coverage, longer timeouts. But the entirety of the tournament starts with Arizona and California at 11:30 on Thursday morning. And then the Pac-12 Network, we had a conversation with Ashley Adamson, our hostess with the mostest. So they'll play two games, then in traditional tournament style, break it up for a couple hours. And then Southern Cal, Colorado, Oregon State, who at the beginning of the season, a lot of people felt could have a chance to win the conference or at least be in the running for a bye, ran into some health issues, some tough losses, and wind up just sixth in league at 10-8, tied with Arizona State, but got bumped via tie breakers. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Accolades, accolades, accolades. That's what came in today for the Oregon women. Sabrina, third straight year, Pac-12 Player of the Year. Taylor Chavez, Pac-12 sixth player of the year, best bench player. Kelly Graves, John Wooden, Pac-12 coach of the year. And the first team, Ruthie Hebert, Sabrina Satu, along with the two great backcourt players for Oregon State, Destiny Slocum and Michaela Pivick. Stanford, Kiana Williams, and Lexi Hull. And on down the line. So there you go. Led me to, I was thinking about, for the moms, dads, guardians, coaches out there who attended in recent years, last couple of years, last 3 years, an Oregon women's game because they wanted to give their kids a chance to see this team and kind of be inspired. And especially for, you know, originally I was like, this is great for young girls who may not be the biggest basketball fans in the world, but, you know, watch the way these young women play, conduct themselves, the fact that they're all tremendous student athletes, and give them something to aspire to. I mean, you know, from a generation who probably started high school in the 80s, and you talk to them, it's like, for the most part, there are exceptions, maybe for individual athletes, tennis players, but for team sports fans, you know, I'm sure there are a lot of young women who grew up with, you know, posters of Magic Johnson and Michael Jordan. But in a college town like this, when you have these successful teams and they could see role models who look like them and, you know, aspire to become a University of Oregon basketball player, softball player, volleyball player, lacrosse player, and on and on and on and on. And, you know, I would say for the most part, if you're listening to a show like ours, you're probably a rather sizable sports fan. So, and I'll tell you what, as much as I love seeing moms and dads with their young girls, seeing the boys, because they're the ones who are going to be like, yeah, I'm totally into women's basketball. Our Oregon Ducks, they're badasses. Love watching them play. They're awesome. And, you know, you kind of plant the seeds because, you know, you see some of these dipwads on Twitter when Sabrina against Stanford a week ago Monday became the first 2,000, 1,000, 1,000 player in Division I history, man or woman. Just, you know, one imbecile in particular is like, oh, yeah, if she went head-to-head against LeBron, you know, you get dunked on every time. Yeah, but the guy on Twitter, LeBron wouldn't dunk on your ass. And if you join the women's basketball team, I'm sure you'd put up 2,000, 1,000, and 1,000. And like Bev Smith told me when we were doing the pregame on Sunday, would anybody put the knock on a great lightweight or middleweight because they couldn't beat Mike Tyson in the 80s? I mean, Thomas Hearns, Sugar Ray Leonard. It's like you do realize that there's a different size, weight, strength, and all that. It's like, and for what bothers me the most is nobody said, Sabrina Ionescu is the greatest basketball player ever at the college level because she scored 1,000 points, had 1,000 rebounds, and 1,000 assists. Like, you don't hear people saying, Pete Rose is the greatest hitter because he had the most hits. You make a blatant statement. Barry Bonds hit more home runs than anybody that ever played Major League Baseball. The end. Any conversation you want to have about where he rates, what were the impact of Peds, totally separate. And you can go on and on. If somebody has X amount of doubles, you know why? That's the amount of doubles they hit. It doesn't mean they're the greatest doubles hitter of all time. And so, you know, and certainly if somebody was like, okay, Wayne Gretzky has the most goals and the most assists, he's the greatest player ever. Okay, sometimes that works out.
Could you really be not the greatest doubles hitter of all time and be like fifth on the all-time doubles chart, though?
Well, it depends. Doubles per year. How long did you do the hang-around thing? You could compile statistics. And the fact, all right, who's the greatest doubles hitter ever?
I have no idea.
Exactly. You just proved my point. Thank you very little. All right, 284.
Took you a second for you to roast me, though, and end the argument.
It's always a matter of time. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Is it Aaron? I mean, doesn't he have, like, every single one of those records? I know Biggio ended up, like, number five. So I'll take a call at 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. You look that up. Matt, welcome to Sports Talk. How you doing?
Good, Steve. So, question, were you at the game on Sunday?
Yeah.
So, on press row, what was the response when Sabrina kicked that Washington player?
Well, first of all, she drove the lane and got fouled. And so she's on her back, and it looked like the Washington player was going to fall on her. And so I think, you know, it was a matter of, don't fall on me. I don't think it was a malicious kick. I think there was some self-preservation in there.
Yeah, I would agree. We were sitting close enough to the Oregon bench where you could hear her come over to Kelly and say she was going to fall on me. But what was funny about that was just the look in her eye when she and how quickly she hopped up. She looked pissed.
Oh, yeah.
At the moment.
Well, first she got fouled, and I think Sabrina also added, what was I supposed to do, catch her?
Yeah. So it was just an interesting situation. I didn't watch the replay, so I didn't know what they were saying on TV about the situation.
Yeah, thanks a lot for the call, Matt. By the way, Tris Speaker, the all-time doubles leader, played 22 years. And Pete Rose was second, by the way. Stan Musial was third.
Would you have ever been able to actually have guessed Tris Speaker?
No.
Okay.
Multiple choice, I would have, you know, I know he was a really productive guy and a great player, but...
So would you say Pete Rose as the second all-time leader in doubles, but the leader in hits... is the best all-time doubles hitter ever, being second. You can't do that.
No, I'm going to need more time to chew on that. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Let's bring in Laura. Laura, good evening. Thank you for calling. How you doing?
Hi, Steve. I'm doing great. I just wanted to weigh in on what you were talking about earlier about young girls and boys both being affected by this Oregon Duck women's team.
Okay, go ahead.
I'm a school teacher, and I teach fourth and fifth graders, and watching my fifth grade boys be so excited to have Sabrina or Ruthie come over and talk to them on the sideline is amazing, and it just makes me feel like it's a whole nother generation that these women are impacting, not just girls, but boys too.
Did they get out to a lot of games?
They did. I love seeing the pictures of them on Facebook. I see family pictures of the boys. One little boy had, when his friend had a sign that said, it's his birthday. So both Ruthie and Sabrina came over and told him happy birthday. Ah. And it was just amazing.
No, their impact, while, you know, in the moment it's spectacular, I think the foundation they've put down for, like you said, young fans for years to come is going to be felt. And I think it's a game changer.
I do too, and I really appreciate these young women. It takes a lot of time to stick around and do autographs every day and to reach out to kids like they do. They really are making a huge difference.
No, I appreciate you calling, Laura, and thanks for being a teacher. You guys are the best.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
All right, take care. I brought this up last year. I think it was the first or second Pac-12 game when it had really become a tradition where... And like Laura said, the willingness of these players to, they got their schoolwork done. They have social lives. Then, you know, it's game time, and they practice hard, and they play hard. And then the game's over. Now it's their time. Nope. They hang around. They take selfies. They did autographs. And I'll tell you what, I bet you after 15 to 18 games over the last couple of years, I would just go down. No, just wander on, have a seat, and just watch the Duck women engage with the kids. And the first one will be the next one, and it'll be the only one, whether it's been Satu, who just is... I heard her giggle with the kids, and Sabrina just smiling, and Ruthie thanking them. And their appreciation, and more importantly, their understanding, like our teacher just said, of what it means to have a duck, a superstar duck, come over to them. And then, you know, they'll see him on SportsCenter or on the Pac-12 network. And it's like, I got her autograph. She came over and said happy birthday to me. I don't have to tell any of you. We were all kids once. And I remember just gushing when I got to meet a Jet or a Giant or a Yankee. I mean, hell, I have autographs at home that I got of Namath and Mantle and, you know, just how nervous I was as a kid. Like, oh my God, this is really, I've been watching on TV. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline, if you want to jump on in. But somebody said, I mentioned that we're going to parlay stats with Pete Rose, and we just let that one go. I just that's my bad.
I take full
responsibility for that one. That's a black mark. That's a, what you would call a demerit. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Let's bring in Steven. Steven, good afternoon. How's Florida?
Fantastic. I have an allergy cough, and tomorrow I'm getting braces being put on my teeth tomorrow, the first time to see an orthodontist. The reason I'm calling you is, what do you think of Jordan Bell? Because he can't play anymore, and the team that he played, it sucks. And I want to say go Warriors tonight.
All right. Thanks a lot, Steven. Yeah, you know, and there you go. Earlier I was saying, the scroll, I saw Jordan Bell's name, and I didn't know what it meant. So he got traded, then cut.
Well, names are given to people so that you can associate them with some sort of word. So when you read the name Jordan Bell, you would think probably first of other people named Jordan, possibly of Bells. You might think of Philadelphia
thinking of the Liberty Bell.
Well, right. So then after that, you probably think, okay, it's not about Philadelphia. It could be about former Oregon player and NBA basketball player Jordan Bell and what's going on with him. And he was a part of like five trades on the deadline day, and he's bounced around from place to place, ended up with Memphis. We thought that Memphis was turning into University of Oregon East or Professional Oregon.
Which was ridiculous.
It was a little over the top, sure. But then he got released, and so now he doesn't have any team that he plays for.
Calls now. Home.
Yeah.
Did he play at all for Memphis? Or just...
He got flipped from, Minnesota to Houston to Memphis? I don't remember hearing him playing for really any of those teams. Because he very quickly ended up on like three teams in a week.
Yeah, well, it was weird because, I mean, he ended up in 68 games last year for Golden State. And it looks like he got in two games for Memphis this year. And, you know, he scored a total of, 5 points, played in a couple blowouts. But, you know, the thing with Jordan, and we talked about it before he went to the NBA, is as a power forward at his size, he was kind of overmatched. He's not quick enough or doesn't have the offensive game to play the small forward. And, you know, while you see a team like Houston, you know, going small, it's, he would not have a role in an offense like that. So he ended up playing 29 games. And, you know, he was never really anything much more than kind of an end-of-the-bench guy. But, you know, the fact that he got an opportunity with a franchise like that, although he originally got drafted by Doubles and moved to Golden State. Right. He was a draft day trade for cash, spent some time with Santa Cruz in the G League, and he was part of that trade deadline deal where it takes up like a paragraph. It involved the Rockets, the Hawks, the T-Wolves, Denver, Clint Capella. It was that day that kind of altered the philosophy of the Houston franchise to make them go small ball. So today, or yesterday it was, he was waived by the Memphis Grizzlies. And with luck, he'll get picked up if somebody wants a deep bench guy who plays defense, hustles, rebounds. Obviously a good shot blocker. But I always thought that he was more of a ninth or tenth bench guy, kind of a tweener. I didn't know if there was at any time a legitimate exact spot for him in the NBA, because, you know, you could be 6'8", 6'9", and athletic and be somewhat of a dominant interior player at the college level, then the step up is just, it's another world.
The coolest thing I ever saw him do at Oregon, I think the Ducks are playing Boise City or something like that. It was one of their early season non-conference games, and I was sitting on press row, and he got a steal and picked up the ball like on a break at the half court line, and all of a sudden he started to like pace out his steps as he got closer to the three-point line, set himself up for his own alley-oop dunk. It was just about the coolest thing I've ever seen in person. Because watching him like actually look at the floor and then the backboard, and he like paced out his steps and knew exactly how many he needed to take to get the dunk off, it was a very cool thing to see happen.
And of course, forever, you know, a member of that team, the 2017 Final Four team. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline, as we make our way through the Tuesday edition of the program. If you'd like to participate, you could also text us 3210824. Try us on Twitter. It's free at 953 the score for the station, for the show, and yours truly at Sports Talk 953. And for Nick, our producer extraordinaire, at Rick Notchers. All right, by the way, we're now into March. You probably noticed that. I don't think we need the breaking news theme. But later this month, 95.3 The Score brings you the world's largest indoor garage sale. It's the 28th of March from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. at the Lane County Fairgrounds. Good opportunity to get rid of some stuff, maybe capitalize, get some spring cleaning done. Hook up your spot now. Booth space starts at $65. That's for a 10-foot by 10-foot spot. Just contact the KUJZ front desk. Reserve your space now. Admission just $2. Don't miss it. The world's largest indoor garage sale is March 28th. It's at the Lane County Fairgrounds. From your friends here at KUJZ, 95.3 The Score. All right, rolling through this Tuesday, as mentioned before. Got some NBA notes to get to, and some stuff from Monday night that I jotted down a few notes, and we shall share, that's fair. Back with more Sports Talk, 95.3 The Score.
Sports Talk with Steve Tannen is brought to you by Guaranty RV Supercenters. Name one of America's top five RV dealers. They don't just sell fun, they guarantee it. See over 700 options for every budget at Guaranty.com.
We can be honest when we look at New England right now. New England's starting skill players today are Julian Edelman, who's beat up last year and is aged. It is N'Keal Harry, Mohamed Sanu, who's getting surgery, Matt Lacoste, and James White. Mm-hmm. That's what Tom Brady right today has to go back to skill player-wise in New England.
Yo, Dan Orlovsky, another guy on the bandwagon of, wait for it, Tom Brady to the Niners. I can't believe I'm going to say this. Well, first, I do believe what I'm going to say first. Welcome back to Sports Talk. I can't believe I said that! 95.3 The Score, the Tuesday edition. That actually sounds like a stupid move. So, if San Francisco brings in Brady, what do they tell Garoppolo? Like, leave? We're going to have this guy for 1 year? Or do they tell him, well, we paid you, we're going to sit you, we're going to pay this guy 30. It doesn't even make sense financially or football-wise. And I'll tell you another thing. Yes, I've thought about this. These words started in my head and are coming out of my mouth. Right now, for the 2020 season, I don't feel like I could absolutely say Tom Brady's a better quarterback to have than Jimmy Garoppolo. What do you think? I mean, It's insanity.
Well, NFL contracts are inherently dumb because they're not fully guaranteed. So there's things like signing bonuses and cap hits and
cap
penalty.
But then we talk about this. They're on the hook for a bunch for Garoppolo.
It's still a bunch, but it's, again, it's a dumb thing where if he's not on the roster after a certain – if he is released from the roster before a certain day, the cap hit is substantially less compared to the next day. These days always fall around in April for
right.
some reason.
I got that.
So if the 49ers actually had a thought that Tom Brady, the Bay Area kid, could come home, play with a 49ers team that works with an offensive run scheme that makes their lesser talented running backs seem a lot better, wide receiver weapons that are getting stronger, and one of the better defenses in the NFL, that is the exact formula that Tom Brady has been using in New England that's won him all of these championships, which is have an okay offense, just enough points to score, really good defense, and you just, ta-da, I'm the best quarterback ever. Basically, what you would be doing is saying, let's take 2 years of Tom Brady, we'll give up on this Garoppolo guy who couldn't complete a couple passes here and there, lost us quite a big Super Bowl game, we get out from a lot of money,
and if it
doesn't work, and things turn out horribly wrong, hey, look at that, you're right in the playing for Trevor Lawrence. Look how that worked out.
I don't even see it. I think it's insane.
Oh, it's the dumbest thing ever. Yeah, you would have to be dumb to say, no, let's walk away from a guy who's in his 20s. No, it's a dumb thing. But again, NFL contracts are inherently dumb and stupid from a fan's perspective because we don't understand all of the money and the cap hits that go into everything. So teams will, pretty regularly, they do this, walk away from talent for financial flexibility.
So my question is, are we discovering that Tom Brady is actually a Jedi and this is a mind meld? He wants to play for the Niners because that's where he's from and everybody is just falling into that. These are not the droids you're looking for.
This is not the team you're looking for.
Yep.
And
that's what's
going to
happen. Garoppolo's just going to say to Lynch and management, better yet, after he meets with Brady, just give him my money. Don't even worry about it. I'll just quit.
Well, Jimmy, Garoppolo's never won a Super Bowl without Tom Brady being the starting quarterback, so that's the formula you need.
I listen to analysts who are like, I know they know as much as me, but analysts are wrong a lot.
Oh, everybody's wrong all the time in the opinion business. Nobody wins here.
All right, so we decided that's dumb. Is it dumber than Nick Wallenda?
I'm excited about.
First of all, I realized yesterday how little network TV I watch. And to, you know, you millennials, you're like, what's network TV? Cause I saw this coming attraction. I'm not sure what station he's on.
It's going to be on ABC tomorrow night at 8 o'clock. Although for everybody out here on the best coast, this is going to be live on the least coast, starting at 5 hour time, where Nick Wallenda of the Flying Wallendas, the Falling Wallendas.
I know who the Wallendas are.
For the audience who doesn't know, Steve, there's more than you and I listening to this show, I think.
I figure if you and I know it, most do.
Maybe. I only know because they talked about it a whole bunch on Levitard because they think it's the dumbest thing ever. Nick Wallenda is going to be walking across a tightrope.
A volcano!
I was getting to that!
I think everybody knows that.
That was the next words I was going to say.
Do you know which volcano?
No, I don't.
Do you know any volcano? Because I don't.
There was that one in Iceland that nobody could pronounce because it had 19 V's in it.
It seems like
Mount Vesuvius. That's the one that blew up in Pompeii.
Okay.
Take that.
So
that's me dropping a history reference of something that happened well before I and maybe even you were born.
It's the Messiah Volcano. And I've said this before. I think adrenaline junkies are the biggest idiots on the planet. Now, if you're talking about like test pilots and those, they at least make a contribution to society because there are advancements. You learn things. You know, Chuck Yeager was a test pilot that led to the advancements that aided NASA and then landed us on the moon, although what the exact benefit
allegedly
of that is. Yeah. So I remember his great-grandfather, Carl Wallenda, who, you know, did some tightrope stuff. And then one day on the news when I was in high school, yeah, he fell to his death. in Puerto Rico, you know, a million stories down, because when you do this dumbass stuff, you don't suffer a sprained ankle. You don't go on the DL unless it's the dead list. So
I remember, like, I think it was maybe 6-7 years ago, he was doing a very similar stunt where he wanted to walk across the Grand Canyon. And the big thing again was, here goes Nick Wallenda. He's going to walk across the Grand Canyon on a very tiny wire with a bar, and he's going to do it without a harness. And you're like, oh, wow, so we're going to watch somebody die today. This is what we're going to do. And everybody in the back of their minds is thinking, wow, we're going to watch him die. This is what's going to happen. This is why we're all watching. We're not kind of like, maybe you're 50-50 rooting for him to set this world record that doesn't really exist, because it's just an arbitrary thing of, yeah, wow, you're the first person to walk across that. You've walked across the most active volcanoes ever, because nobody else would be smart enough to ever try to walk across an active volcano. So you're going to watch a guy who's going to melt in magma.
Yeah, and I don't care what anybody says, you're watching to see if he falls into the volcano.
You're not rooting for it, just be honest about it. Yeah, you're not rooting for him to do it, although you might be. Maybe you're a sick person in that way.
So ABC News puts out this 5 things to know about Wallenda's high wire walk. It's like, one, he's an idiot. 2, his family are bigger idiots and never learn their lesson. 3, people are masochists. 4, the networks are whores. 5,
people are going to watch.
1 through 4.
The thing is, though, is apparently people are reading, looking up the numbers on who watches this, and there's a ton of people that, like, they jump in at the beginning because they think, okay, it's a 2-hour-long show, maybe it's going to take him that long with some commercial breaks in there, and they're going to have to talk it out, and you're going to hear all this strategy, and everybody peters
out.
Here's
the strategy.
And then at the very end, right before he's in midway through his run, everybody comes running back to the TV. Okay, now he's directly above the lava inside of the volcano. Is he going to fall in? A little wobble? Oh, did he get in?
Somebody wants Tony Romo to add to the broadcast.
I don't know, Jim.
Now, of course, people from my generation are like, we did this. His name was Evel Knievel. He used to jump a motorcycle. He tried to jump the fountains at Caesar's Palace and broke, like, everything. It was one of the most horrific crashes you ever saw. Then he got in a mini rocket and tried to jump across the Snake River Canyon.
Wow.
Shot out. All of a sudden, just went shot out. The parachutes opened, and he kind of safely landed in the Snake River.
Did you win the – what was his name? Baumgartner? He was the guy who rode a hot air balloon, like, into the ultra stratosphere or something. Basically took a gigantic
– oh, right, and then jumped?
Yeah. I think it was like a Red Bull-sponsored thing where he rode in the weather balloon to as high as any person has ever been,
right,
on, like, a man-made thing without being in a rocket and going into space, and then he jumped out. I watching that was one of the coolest things I've ever seen, because I was like, the idea of all of this is that you can find him back on Earth when he lands. Like, has anybody done the math as to where they think he's going to aim for? Because when you're that high up, you can't, like, find a target somewhere on Earth. You can kind of get, like, jumping towards a general area.
Well, don't
of
they
the
get
planet.
Pretty close? Because, I mean, think about it. When every Apollo rocket went into space, then lost everything, and then all they had left was the module, they usually landed pretty close to where the ships were and the helicopters were the South Pacific.
Well, yeah, but they landed in the ocean, because that covers 70% of the planet. And I'm sure as they're coming down...
Why are you going to land? The ocean.
Well, I mean, he might have. Like, there's no telling as to, like, how long is it going to take him to actually fall down? Where is he going when he's gone up? How many spins has the Earth taken since then? Like, if you launch him over land, if you launch him over enough land, is he set to come back to land? Is he going to be able to even control himself as he's falling? This is crazy stuff.
The requests that we're getting and the connection to Bill Walton is just making me regret bringing this whole thing
up.
Have
you ever been to a volcano?
And by the way, somebody said, yeah, we live in a state where there are multiple volcanoes here.
Oh, yeah. That's
if they're not in Eugene, I want no part of them. Maybe Portland.
There's the lava flow in Bend is a really cool like nature hike thing you can do where you see like all of the leftover and the remaining like the rocks or whatever it's called of the hardened lava lands thing. It's a very cool little hike you can do in Bend. It's a cool thing.
Somebody actually just brought up the guy who basically got all these giant balloons and floated around hanging out in his lawn chair.
Oh, yeah. Well, there was Balloon Boy, too. Balloon Boy was like when I was in high school, and that was one of the first like big Twitter moments was what's going on with Balloon Boy. And he was just a kid who just tied a couple balloons to a chair like the movie Up. All of a sudden it floats away. I'm going to hide in the attic and it's going to become an international sensation. That kid's like applying for colleges now. Can you believe that?
No. I've had this conversation when we were on 95.3, The Cave, back in the early 90s. This conversation.
That was 10 years ago.
They advertised whatever one of the jump schools are. Might be down south. I don't know where it is. I don't care.
Oh, my God.
And they actually kind of came to me, and this was the conversation. Have you ever, what's it called? Skydiving? Have you ever done skydiving? No. Oh, you're going to love it. We're definitely going to get you to do it. No, you're not. The conversation, I'll never forget having it outside our manager's office. In their mind, because they had listened to the station, figure I'm a little nuts, I'm from Jersey, they're going to come and I'm like going to do an endorsement and jump out of a plane. And it's like, well, I can remember his. I mean, we're talking 27, 28 years ago. And I'm like, I don't think you understand. I think, and I said to the guy, I think you're idiots. You know, if you're teaching our soldiers to jump out of a plane, you know, as paratroopers, you know, I understand that. That's a dire circumstance. You know, you're talking about freedom, defending, you know, the motherland. But to voluntarily, for fun, jump out of a plane with one of you nincompoops, if you think that this is even a discussion, the answer is like, no isn't doing it enough. I need a new word. Like, no, just something.
No isn't enough, so I'm going to say use the same two letters.
But, no. I had to be more emphatic. And then I got the, so what do you do for fun? It's like, live. Dumbass. It's like, and that's when I first came up with one of my theories of, you know, about, you know, outdoors people and who always, you know, I was like, when I'm in Vegas and I'm at the $10 table and I'm deciding whether to double down into the dealer's 10, yeah, my adrenaline's pumping. And I never got attacked by a bear. My parachute never failed to open. The river never rose. So if it's okay with you, I'm off to the MGM Grand. You go jump out of your plane like an imbecile.
Whitewater rafting, though, that's a thrill.
Oh, yeah, I've whitewater rafted. That's different.
That's a thrill, though. That's exciting.
The Delaware River in Jersey is actually pretty famous for that. I'm sure it's nothing like the Colorado and in the Rockies and stuff like
that. Oh, yeah. I've known people that have done like the multiple day like camping whitewater rafting trips, and like there's some parts where it gets kind of sketchy. The only thing I've done is, again, in Bend, where they take you on a little river and you got a couple like sketchy parts, and they're like, oh, there's about a two. It gets about as bad as a two. There could be some parts on a really weird day. If the river's flowing fast, it's kind of like three, That gets exciting. They're teaching, they spend like 5 minutes talking about like the best way to fall out of the boat, and if you do fall out of the boat, how to like get yourself ready and swim to the sides and all that stuff. It's crazy. But yeah, no bear fighting, no skydiving for me or whatever. I'll swim with a shark. I'd do that. I'd feel much more comfortable underwater as opposed to way above the ground. Put me in a metal cage in the ocean with a little snorkel, that's fine.
I feel I've become a better person. Have a better understanding and appreciation by learning from my mistakes. The parachute doesn't open. That's a mistake other people learn from. I'm not willing to make that sacrifice. All right, let's take our final break. We'll be back with the tweet of the day.
So are we watching the – I think we're going to have to watch to talk about it on Thursday. I think it's going to be a big show topic. I got to know what happened.
I'll be like this. If I hear he fell in, I'll YouTube it and be like, yeah, I saw the idiot fall into the volcano. That was necessary.
The last hour of the show tomorrow, though, is going to be right when he's starting.
Oh, really?
We're going to have to
wait
3 hours because it's tape delayed out here on the least coast, on the West Coast, Best Coast.
I'm concerned.
It's 1950 or something.
So many levels. I don't even know where to start. So maybe we'll just end. We'll take a break. We'll be back. We'll wrap up the 5 o'clock hour and the Tuesday edition of the show next. 95.3 The Score.
And now, it's the Coors Light refreshing tweet of the day.
They are trending, twittering, tweeting, you name it.
On Sports Talk with Steve Tannen.
LOL, laugh out loud, OMG, oh my God, WTF, why the face?
Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer.
Hi, everybody.
Yo, Doc Nick.
Hello, host Steve. Nick Rogers here at the Coors Light Broadsport Sports Desk for the Coors Light Refreshing Tweet of the Day. Coors Light, mountain cold refreshment that is made to chill. This is a tweet from yesterday that we didn't have time to get to because we had to very quickly blow through the tweet of the day to get to Coach Waz. Why do we call him Coach Waz? Coach Waz of the Oregon baseball team. somebody tweeted at at Jeff Bisti tweeted, I'm about to get kicked out of this supermarket. There is a grocery store display with a Gatorade that has a basketball hoop next to this big wall, and it's near the produce department because there's a whole stand of I believe they're cantaloupes, possibly honeydew melons, and they're just far enough away. And at Jeff Bistel tweeted, I'm about to get kicked out of the supermarket because I'm pretty sure these melons are set up so that you're trying to shoot them into the Gatorade basket.
Yeah, I saw that.
I don't know anybody at the very least, you're looking for the melon that you're going to, like, something that's a little lighter, maybe basketball weight. You're going to try and take a shot.
Wait a minute. This is the second time in a week that we've decided to use a produce as a ball of some kind.
Yeah, using fruit in sports.
Whether it's how far you could throw it or how accurately you could throw it, to now if you could dunk a melon.
No, I don't think it's dunk a melon. I think it's would you actually attempt to shoot like a long two with a cantaloupe?
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. I think you would.
I get my ass kicked out. But if I went splash, I'd be like, I just, as they're dragging me out, my arm is still extended from the swish.
And then I guess some funny jokes about a not funny thing. At Inside the NCAA tweeted that the NCAA established a coronavirus advisory panel. This is something that's been rumored that maybe NCAA tournament games would be held without fans at them to prevent more people possibly infecting themselves and things like that. And some very funny jokes now about the NCAA, not necessarily corona, but poking fun at the NCAA. At the Jason Kirk tweeted, well, at least now it can't transfer. NCAA is getting involved. But at Roger Sherman of The Ringer, with our tweets of the day here. Great news! The NCAA has ruled that the coronavirus is ineligible for postseason competition. And nobody's allowed to bring the coronavirus to the floor area of an NCAA tournament site unless it's in a Powerade cup. Just fantastic.
That was one of the funniest things I heard because I experienced that once very innocently, and I got the elbow grab walking in the first year they held the NCAAs in Portland. So this is probably 10, 12 years ago, and I don't know what I had the audacity to have gotten from the bar, non-alcoholic, and I had it in a regular container. Whoa, you got to pour it in this. Really? And I looked around. I was like, oh, really?
I think it was
a Gatorade. And I had it, and I had to pour it into the cup.
That's the worst. You can't bring a Gatorade to a Powerade party, man. So thanks to at Roger for the refreshing tweet of the day. Follow us on Twitter at 953thescore. Steve is on Twitter at SportsTalk953. And I am on Twitter at Rick Nodgers. Don't be a jerk. Just do it.
Yeah, you read now. Was it the Pirates had the whole facility scrubbed,
sanitized.
Yeah. And by the way, if I'm a Pirates fan, I'm like, okay.
No.
I've said this a million times. I have gotten not into real disputes, but people online at, you know, the TSA line at the airport, you know, kind of pissing and moaning about how long it's taking. and kind of, you know, sometimes you look at somebody and you hope to get the agreeable nod, and I'm always like, I don't care how long they take as long as I get a safe trip. It's like, I hate flying, I hate airports, and it's because of the potential of what awful thing could happen. So, you guys up there, you double checking, and it's like when we go in to Matthew Knight Arena or Autzen, as a member of the media, they check your backpack. And I always go, here's my paperwork. I open it. Here's my laptop with the cord. Look at it. If you want to probe me, go ahead. But if it prevents any other idiot with any other ideas, go ahead. Be diligent. I don't care. I'm totally in your corner on this. And that's like the one time in life where I'm patient. My wife always says to me, whether it's with my dogs, with my grandkids, and like where there's safety involved, I use all my patience there. Then out in the world for the other 94% of my life,
oh, you have none.
I have none. Forget about it. It's the worst.
If there is one other car, we've left Autzen at 1, 2 o'clock in the morning. We have to like lug the gear across the parking lot. And like there's one person who's on the other side of the parking lot over there. And you're like, ah, bleep, 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 bleep.
Gotta,
bleep, this guy's in my way. Can't go there. Blah, 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 blah. Bleep, 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 bleep. What's up with this red light? I don't know what's going on. I'm the only person on the road. Bleep, 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 bleep. No patience.
I vent. It keeps me sane. It keeps me alive. It keeps the aneurysm at bay. All right. Looking ahead to tomorrow, the Oregon softball team, Coach Melissa Lombardi, will join us at 3:30. Oh, we'll be looking ahead at Oregon Cal on the men's side. Todd McKim will join us at 4:30. Oh, we will also have a crunch exchange, plus the one joy you get of doing this show, two or three idiotic or brilliant things will happen between now and tomorrow that we will look forward to discussing with you. I guess also now we have to think of which piece of fruit or produce would you be most accurate with shooting foul shots?
A coconut.
Coconut? Okay.
Because it's
small enough?
It's got to be round. It can't be too heavy. It's got to be about the...
Yeah, melon or even a cantaloupe is just disproportionately heavy.
It's got to feel like a basketball.
Hit a lettuce?
A cabbage. A cabbage.
Cabbage.
Cabbage patch.
Go, and you have to cabbage patch kind of like from the 90s before you take your free throw. I think there's a definite place for that. All right. Fun show today. You guys contribute, and sometimes it's like, I know we're nuts, but it's nice to know you're out there matching a shot for shot. Enjoy your night. Catch you tomorrow. Crunch time and Sports Talk, 95.3 The Score.